Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Well, I chose that reading from Dr. King's speech to AFSCME because it helps remind us of the breadth of the movement in which he was a leader. Black civil rights, economic justice, and ending violence. He called racial prejudice, poverty, and war the three great evils facing the world. And for him, they were all connected, even if at a particular time he was working primarily on one or the other. 50 years later, we have a word for that, intersectionality. But he knew it already. They were connected. But I want to talk a bit about this morning because I think it is helpful to us in ours figuring out what's going on and what we need to do. Draws on the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. was a theological liberal. Although steeped in the Bible-based Baptist tradition of his family and the son of a preacher, he was not a biblical literalist. As a seminarian, he took seriously the studies and critical readings of the Bible and studies in philosophy. And he made use of all of these. But nonetheless, though he was a liberal in his theology, he was a radical in his actions. He was raised for leadership. He was brought up to be a leader. He was a child of Atlanta's established black middle class, trained for leadership from childhood, starting college at 15 and graduating from Morehouse College at the age of 19. And then went from there to Crozer Seminary, which was then in Pennsylvania. And early in his studies for the ministry, he began to worry that the fact that he did not take the Bible literally could become a problem for him as a preacher in his tradition. Yet by the time he graduated from Crozer Seminary, he was already a promising and increasingly popular preacher as he filled pulpits as a student. He went on to Boston University to get a PhD in theological and religious studies, where his teachers included Paul Dietz, who's not that well known out of academia, but a scholar of social ethics, with whom I was privileged to study the year before Dietz himself retired. And Dietz was one of King's dissertation advisors. And Howard Thurman, who was the dean of the chapel at Boston University and a professor in the School of Theology there. And Howard Thurman, as many of you probably know, was sort of the minister to the ministers who were leaders in the civil rights movement, the person to whom they turned for counsel and advice when they were struggling. So he had two powerful intellectuals influencing his life as a doctoral student, other fine faculty. And so he did a lot of study of social ethics and became acquainted with what's known as the Boston School of Personalism, a philosophical strain that focuses on personality as the core concern, the human personality and divine personality. For King, God always remained something personal. But he had deep and analytical understandings that strengthened and supported him. And he wrote his doctoral dissertation comparing the concepts of God in the work of Paul Tillich, a Protestant theologian in the Reformed tradition, whom some other Christian theologians claimed wasn't really a Christian or even believed in God. Because Paul Tillich was the one who talked about the God beyond God, who said, what we call God is really representation of something we can't directly know. And one of the most popular books is called The Ground of All Being, a very abstract notion of God. And Henry Nelson Wyman, who was a Unitarian process theologian, who put forth the idea that God was not a being or personality, but the process of creative interchange among people. And it's an interesting dissertation if you like reading these things. And I actually was quite a student of Wyman as an undergraduate, so I did like reading it when I got to it. But that personalism stayed with him, and he concluded that both Tillich and Wyman presented an idea of God that was so impersonal that it really couldn't move people to action. And it was while he was in Boston that he met and married Coretta Scott, who was there as a music student, a singer. And they together frequently attended the Unitarian Arlington Street Church in Boston. Coretta Scott was already in the habit of attending Unitarian churches as an undergraduate in Ohio. And years after her husband's death, she mentioned that in an interview with Rosemary Bray McNatt, now the president of the Starr King School for Ministry. And so I make the argument that between his non-literal reading of the Bible, his immersion in philosophy as a way of understanding theology, and his focus on the personality as opposed to physical entities, that he was very much a liberal in his theology. And if you read a lot of King's sermons or listen to them, you'll find biblical references, but you'll often find discourses and ideas from the ancient Greek philosophers in dealing with ethics and how to bring meaning into life. I think he has at least one sermon that draws on Immanuel Kant, an early modern philosopher. And these were also of value to him in his preaching as much as his biblical roots. And although he explicitly rejected liberal notions of the easy perfectibility of human beings, he believed in the use of reason and science and openness to new understandings. And all of that is behind those absolutely brilliant and moving sermons and addresses that he gave. And maybe because all of that was behind it, he could make God real for people who were hearing him. So King's liberalism enabled him to engage in radical action. And one thing that came out of that was his social justice actions. His action for civil rights was so effective and so disruptive that the National Baptist Convention ran him out. And that's when the National Progressive Baptist Convention was started. Because he knew he wasn't a biblical literalist. He was shaking things up a lot. And he was challenging status quo in a lot of places, at home as well as elsewhere. He was able to form alliances with individuals and groups with whom he did not always completely agree. This book of speeches to labor groups includes appreciation of their financial support of the movement and the criticism of some unions about the fact that their well-paying jobs were at this point only available to white workers. And the segregation of unions was also something he targeted whenever he spoke before a segregated union. And nonviolent resistance as a method of bringing about change was radical and forceful. It had never been tried in this country on that scale before. And whenever I think about it and I look at it, I think about the fact that black men and women who in the 1950s had firsthand knowledge of lynching and what could happen if you were arrested, still got themselves arrested and filled the jails. It inspired that kind of courage and commitment to do what needed to be done to get the vote, to integrate the bus systems, to stop the disenfranchisement, to mobilize power. And how dangerous that could be came back to our front pages this week when we were reminded that John Lewis had his skull broken and was nearly beaten to death in Selma in 1965. And someone, I won't name him, said, "You talk a good talk, but why don't you go do something for your district?" Well, central to King's theology, as I mentioned, is personality, both divine and human. And anything that damages the human person would oppose God's goodness. So a segregated society damaged persons of color. An economically unjust society damaged the poor. A violent society damaged persons of all races and classes, here and abroad. Anthony Pinn, the humanist theologian, in an essay in Theology Today a few years ago, dives deeper into King's theology and makes the assertion that the divine person needs human persons to complete the work of justice. And what King was about was getting human persons to assist the divine person in completing justice. So King built alliances with persons and groups in order to do the healing of persons and the healing of society. He had what the historian Dan McCannon calls prophetic encounters with people in labor, with people in other ethnic groups, with white progressives and liberals, and certainly with white opponents. And almost 55 years ago, in a speech to the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Workers Union, he laid out his vision of the three evils: racial prejudice, economic injustice and inequality, and violence. Praised the work of that union in working on economic injustice, and also put forth the idea, which he repeatedly promoted, this is conveniently forgotten at many commemorations, that a guaranteed minimum income was essential. And that was the surest path to addressing recalcitrant poverty. He spoke of that many times. And of course, we forget that he also described himself as a democratic socialist. He didn't use the language of the left, but he identified himself when asked as a democratic socialist. He allied himself with the National Welfare Rights Organization, an organization established on the premise that people in poverty who receive public benefits had rights themselves and the rights of their self-determination and the rights to due process and fair treatment. And in 1967, while he was leading the Poor People's Campaign, he went to the Teamsters, a union that provided him a lot of support, but which he also criticized because of their segregated membership, and spoke there of the need for a guaranteed annual income after chastising them for not having enough people of color in their membership. And when King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968, he was in Memphis supporting the black sanitation workers organizing a union for a strike to get fair pay and benefits. And the reading I gave you earlier was from a speech he made to AFSCME in Memphis on March 18th. Not as famous as the sermon he gave the night before he died, but really important in laying out how he saw this overall struggle for justice. So King's theology may have been liberal, but his actions and certainly his opinions about what could be done were radical. He was an ally of organized labor, something that seems quaint to many people today, but absolutely essential. And he was a critical ally. He would go head to head with union leaders on where they fell down. He challenged the definition of what was lawful in terms of rights, in terms of the discrimination that people faced. And when he came out against the Vietnam War, which he based on two principles, one was prejudice against people of color in that war, and the other, the use of war in any way when other paths were available. When he came out against that war, he opposed President Johnson, who had really done a lot of heavy lifting for the movement, who had pushed the civil rights legislation through Congress. And he came up against the AFL-CIO, which supported civil rights, but was still very much in its anti-communist mode and could not let go of the militarism that provided so many jobs to so many of its members and its anti-communism, which had been part of its culture since the merger of the AFL and the CIO. And he countered the bootstrap mythology of American capitalism to fight for a just economy. He fought the notion that people were poor because they were lazy or because they didn't want to work or whatever, and pointed to the structures that got in the way of people getting education and the jobs that they needed. Now, King avoided the language of left politics, although, as I said, he did identify himself as a democratic socialist, but he didn't go out to speeches beginning, "I'm a democratic socialist." That was not how he got through to people. But he was as radical in his approach to peace, to economic justice, and to civil rights as any of the members of the New Left with whom he made common cause in the efforts against the war in Vietnam. Now, since King's day, the forces of reaction have beaten down labor. The last three decades have been terrible for organized labor. And they are attacking the victories of the civil rights movement. We even had the Supreme Court void part of the Voting Rights Act. And what did we see happen after that? But states, North and South, where reactionaries were in control, rushing to make it harder for people of color and immigrants to vote. The best way to honor Dr. King on his birthday is to continue with radical action against these three great evils: war, racial injustice, and economic injustice. Now, we who are Unitarian Universalists have a liberal theology, and perhaps in the spectrum a bit more liberal than King's, but a theology that recognizes the value of various beliefs, the value of all persons, that allows for reason and respect for others, for tolerance of differences. We're defined by principles such as the worth and dignity of every person, which lines up completely with the personalist philosophy that King held to. We are supporters and believers of the democratic process. The announcement of the town hall meeting earlier reflects the fact that even within our congregation, it's a democratic process. But the democratic process at large, and the commitment to justice and compassion in human relationships. These can sound empty in the abstract, but they are the basis for the radical actions that our times demand today. There is so much we face this year, so much reaction pushing back against the achievements of the last 50, 60, and with labor the last century, with civil rights, great achievements of the last 60 years, pushing back against those, pushing back against the achievements of the women's movement of the last 30 and 40 years. There is so much pushing back. And those of us who hold to these liberal religious principles of the worth and dignity of every person, the democratic process, and justice, compassion, and compassion in human relationships are obliged by these principles to take whatever actions are needed to push back against the reactionary forces we face today and to keep moving forward with the dream of the beloved community that King put forth, but not as a dream, but as a reality. Dream is a bad word. It's a vision. It's a vision of what's possible. And we have to hold that vision high even as we're slogging through the mud of struggle. So if we were to honor Dr. King on his birthday, the best way to do so would be to take our theology and our principles and be as radical as he was in working for peace, for economic justice, and for civil rights. May we do so today and every day. Amen and blessed day.